This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 94, the use of lifts in nursing homes. Are they really safe? The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And you have come upon episode 94 of this podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the use of slings and lifts in a nursing home or skilled nursing facility setting. What's usually involved in that, how they're operated, the different types of lifts. Because this is something that's very important. A lot of our cases, at least a fair percentage of them, involve the handling of residents from getting out of bed into a wheelchair or even standing up. And a lot of times that requires more than just personnel. Mm-hmm. It requires
equipment.
And so a lot of times there can be malfunctioning equipment. There can be equipment that is not, that's human error. There's a misuse of the equipment, and it can involve injuries, and sometimes those injuries can be catastrophic. So today on the episode, we're going to be talking about the use of lifts, the use of slings, how they can be made safer. And we are not alone in that task and that charge. We're going to have a guest on, and this is the second time she's appeared on the podcast. And Will, can you tell us about who it is?
Sure. Today we're going to have second time guest, Teresa Boynton. She is a Hillrom clinical consultant on safe patient handling and mobility, which is, if you hear us talk about it, we'll abbreviate as SPHM, a position she's held for the past 3 years. She assists healthcare facilities across the U.S. with implementing and sustaining SPHM programs, which include a focus on preventing patient and resident falls. Before this, she worked at Banner Health for over 26 years. She led the Banner Health Safe Patient Handling and Falls Prevention Team. And she developed and worked with a Banner team on validating and implementing the Bedside Mobility Assessment Tool for nurses, which is just amazing that she was the lead on that team. And that's the BMAT, which is used in nursing homes and hospitals all across the nation. She's authored two articles on BMAT. She is certified by the Association of Safe Patient Handling Professionals, and she's presented at numerous conferences, including last year's National Fall Prevention Conference on Mobility is a Fall Prevention Intervention. And then the year before that, at the Greenhouse Long-Term Care Conference on Meaningful Life and Mobility Safe Lifting Practices. This is a very important issue, and she is a very knowledgeable guest. So we are very happy to have Ms. Boynton on the show today.
Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right.
And Teresa, we're happy to have you on here because, and I think we talked about this last time, I was a CNA for a long time in nursing homes. And back before, this was 20 years ago when I started, back before it became wider practice with Hoyer lifts and different mechanical assistants that they use now, they would just use the stronger CNAs to try to lift people. Mm-hmm. And that's a horrible idea for both the CNA and the resident. So my first question is, what need do slings and lifts actually fulfill in nursing homes then?
And again, a great question. They really do provide a much safer environment, both for the resident and for the caregivers. Using a variety of lifts and slings help the residents be moved, transferred as much as they should be, so you avoid keeping them bed or chair bound. It definitely allows for a much more dignified way of handling and caring for the patient. You have fewer caregivers, or you don't have to just grab the strongest CNAs and have them grabbing, lifting, pushing, and pulling the resident. It allows for safer and more frequent toileting. You can keep the resident independent with their elimination needs longer and avoid having to use adult diapers any earlier than absolutely necessary. And it really is safer for both residents and their caregivers, as you stated. And especially, as you pointed out, it's a key element in protecting caregivers. By preventing caregiver musculoskeletal injuries, we're not asking our CNAs, our aides, to do the heavy lifting, pushing, pulling, and awkward positions. I am really passionate about this topic because I've worked with way too many CNAs, patient care techs that suffered from career-ending, life-altering back, shoulder injuries. So it's just providing a much safer environment, again, not only for the residents, but for their caregivers.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people have this misconception that nursing homes are just a bunch of little old people, and they're not. They're reflective of society as a general, as a whole. Of they're humans, and you know, some humans can be larger than others. You know, I've taken care of men who may not have been very mobile, but were, you know, 6'3" and 200 something pounds. That's a large person to take care of.
Well, and frankly, I just want to add that if you think about a small, elderly, frail person can easily weigh 110, 125 pounds. And in no other industry would we expect an employee, a worker, to have to lift even that amount of weight. So you're absolutely right. They're not all frail elderly people, but even the frail elderly weigh a significant amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't predict what a human body is going to do.
That's right. I was going to say, it's not like a box of cans. It's a human person that has different weight points, and it can be very difficult. And I appreciate the fact that you said that, because I mean, you're right. I mean, like day in and day out, an employee that has to lift the 110-year-old Miss Johnson out of bed, they're going to develop problems. So that's one of the benefits of these lifts. It's not just for the resident, but it's for the long-term health of the actual employees administering the aid.
So, Teresa, if we could talk about how a sling is used and how it's related to a lift.
Sure. A sling is the piece, typically fabric. Sometimes it can be a more rigid material, but it's the piece that's applied directly to the resident. Mm. Think of a hammock or think of a baby swing seat, that type of thing. It typically has different ways of being attached, but it has to be attached to the lift. So the sling by itself can't really do anything with it, nor the lift by itself. The two pieces work in conjunction. Usually the sling is attached to a hanger bar or a spreader bar that comes down from the lift. It goes up and down, and the sling is attached onto the hanger bar or spreader bar. Slings can be used to lift up residents in a seated position, suspend them, move them from, for instance, bed to chair. There are slings that are used to hold up just a leg, for instance, doing a wound care bandage change. It can be used to keep a resident flat to do a what's called a lateral transfer. Also can be used to help with ambulating a patient, and typically that would be called a sling or a type of vest or a pants that holds the resident up so they cannot fall. But the sling is attached in some manner, loops, clips, a key type of a clip to the hanger bar or to something on the lift.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, we didn't have a lot of this equipment when I first started, because not only was it a couple of decades ago, but it was also in some very rural areas of Georgia that by themselves were a couple of decades behind the rest of Georgia and the rest of America. But the first time that I went somewhere that had a Hoyer lift, I was like, man, this is amazing. Because you really can pick up, let's say you have a 300-pound resident, instead of me and maybe one other person, you know, hurting our back or hurting ourselves and risking dropping the resident, you've got this machine that comes right in there. You put the sling underneath them, you wrap it up to the lift, and it picks them up with ease, without any problems. They're amazing. But
correct.
But there's still equipment, and you know, our audience doesn't realize this, but in the middle of filming this podcast, we actually had a malfunction because technology, you know, is not foolproof.
Yeah, I'm still stressing out about it. Like, yeah. I'm having to lean back and just catch my breath anyway.
But how safe is the equipment, and you know, are there dangers in the failure? I mean, because a Hoyer lift might not throw its back out like I can, but it's still, I mean, there is some danger, right?
Well, absolutely. And I'd like to say that all lifts, and Hoyer is a brand, it's been around for a long time, but there are a variety of other vendors, manufacturers of equipment. And I'd like to say that they're all safe, but I unfortunately recognize that all lifts are not created equal, nor are all slings created equal. I became aware of that when I started really looking at the FDA medical device reports from the manufacturer and user facility device experience database. I know that's a lot of words, but it's a database that is mandatory reporting for manufacturers and ask that caregivers at residents nursing homes also report their incidents. And in reviewing these, found out that there really are some issues. Some lifts tip over much more easily, leading to some pretty significant injuries, possibly even death. Slings do not stay attached to the hanger bars or to the lift for a variety of reasons. It may be that they're worn. It may be that they weren't applied properly in the first place. Again, leading to some very significant injuries and deaths. Sometimes the loops from slings come off, or again, were not properly attached. But one of the other areas that really concerned me personally was there were a large number of residents who fell out or slid out of a sling that was properly attached. And from my own experience in the field working with a variety of lifts and slings, I recognize that if you have a sling, for instance, that really hasn't been designed or safety tested to fit on a longer hanger bar, so a hanger bar that's wider than another hanger bar, that may stretch the sling tightly. And if the resident is sitting in it, it kind of pitches them or has them sit very upright, very forward. And then it becomes very easy for them to just shift their weight slightly forward and they can slip, fall out, slide out of the sling. And again, with some very devastating consequences. So the resident can sustain broken bones, knocked out teeth, head injuries. And again, there have been a number of deaths, and I just think that this is just absolutely unacceptable, that we need to really be looking at the slings and the lifts that are being used in our nursing homes, in our long-term care facilities, have to be safe, they have to be well chosen, staff have to be well trained on how to use them.
And I completely agree with that. I have actually seen a couple of people fall through a sling before. We had one woman, I mean, God bless her. She may have been 90 pounds and she was very contracted, and it was very difficult to get a sling around her because she would go through the middle part of it every time. What kind of training is required so that staff know how to use these slings and this equipment?
Well, so there does need to be good training. Staff need to really be competent, not only in how to use the lift, how to push the buttons, make it go up and down, how to apply the sling, but then really a lot of care needs to be taken in how do you choose the appropriate type and size sling. So for the resident that you mentioned, there are slings that there would be no way that she could slide through the hole in the center or at the bottom, that it's applied properly, it's sized properly, and that just should not happen. I'm afraid too often that the training is not focused enough on choosing again, not only the right type of sling and having it available. I've been in long-term care nursing home facilities where they just don't have enough slings, nor do they have the right type or the right sizes. So I should be able to know what type of sling is needed for this resident's particular size, weight, girth, medical conditions such as contractions, such as really fragile skin. So I should be able to choose from what type of sling is available, and then I should really be able to look at, using the manufacturer's guidelines, what size sling is going to be not only the most comfortable for this resident, but also absolutely safe, that there is no way this resident can slide out or fall out of this sling. So to me, that has to be part of the training, and it's a piece that I don't think enough emphasis is put on, that the sling, sizing it, is choosing it, choosing the appropriate type is really important. And I think that administrators of facilities really should be paying attention to their safe resident handling program. Mm-hmm. Do they not only have lifts that are safe, that are stable, that don't tip over, that staff are well trained on, that they have instruction guides, they've gone through some type of competency check for the lift, and then the same thing for the sling. And then the other piece that the training absolutely needs to cover is doing that safety inspection before you ever put the sling on the resident or before you ever attach the sling to the lift. So checking it over, are there any worn areas that could potentially split? Are there any tears close to a loop on a sling that, again, could tear? Is the clip, if it's a plastic clip, is it in good condition? No cracks in it. Can you really push it on so it's secured onto the piece of the lift that it needs to be secured to? So those safety checks every single time before you ever put the sling on the resident or before you ever use the lift to lift the resident in the sling. All of that needs to be covered in the training. It really isn't just a here, this is how it works, push the button, it goes up and down, and here's the sling, and you just put it on the resident, and we don't have enough slings, and we really don't know where to find them. All of those parts and pieces are needed to have the components or the foundation for not only a program that's going to help your caregivers, but again, is really going to ensure the safety of your residents.
Teresa, where is the training manual, the programming coming from? Is it coming from the manufacturer who says this is how it works and these are best practices? Or is this something that, is there an association that produces guidelines that the nursing home can just basically take and implement? Where are those documents coming from that the nursing staff can be trained on?
So there are a variety of places they come from. OSHA has their ergonomics for the prevention of musculoskeletal disorders that talks about lifts and the safe resident handling program in rather broad terms. And then it really does kind of vary. I'm fortunate I worked for a company that provides very good training materials. So competency checklist, that you go through the checklist, video training, make sure that you really can see how it works. And then the recommendation is instruction guides, that this is instruction guides as far as here's how you size the sling, this is the weight capacity that's appropriate for sling, and some other very specific guidelines on how to safely apply and use the sling. So I really think, again, I'm pleased that the company I work for provides very good materials for training, clinical videos. And then part of the training, so you have some of those resources. It really, to me, is manufacturer specific. So I would go to the manufacturer, the vendor for the equipment, and say, show me, what do you provide that is really going to help me make sure that my staff is fully trained, is fully competent, and that we can easily keep staff trained, looking at turnover, looking at retention. Not only how do we train new staff, but how do we do those quick updates, quick competency checks so that your caregivers really feel like they are competent and that they can safely for themselves and for the residents that they care for come in and use the equipment appropriately. So at some facilities, they develop some of their own tools in conjunction with the manufacturer. But I think that, again, there are some manufacturers that automatically provide, as part of a comprehensive program, good training materials. There are national standards, international standards, but I think for the front line, I want those videos, I want the competency checklist, I want the instruction guides that are brief but very succinct, so that when I'm done with that training, I know I can and can safely move a resident.
And we briefly touched on this, but what is your understanding of the thought processes of the administrator when they're looking through catalogs or they're determining what lifts to purchase? Are they looking at MDS reports for the facility? Like, how do they know to pick one lift over another?
That's a real good question. So I think different facilities go about it in different ways. I really feel like they should be trialing the equipment. I also think, not that they need to dive into it thoroughly, but I think it wouldn't hurt to look at the FDA medical device reports. There are other incident report databases out there. I think it would be good to look at those and see, are there certain lifts, certain manufacturers that are showing up on those, in those databases more than others? So just being aware that if you go to the database, you'll see certain names that those lifts tend to tip more easily. So I, as an administrator, would want to know that. If I'm doing an equipment demonstration or equipment trial or a skill fair, I would want to bring in a couple of different pieces and look at these. How easy are they to maneuver? How intuitive are they? And then I'd want to know from the manufacturer, show me what are the training pieces that you provide to help me make sure that my staff are competent in using the lifts. I'm afraid that too often, especially at nursing homes, long-term care, they are just looking at what is the least expensive. But I think if they would look at, sometimes choosing the least expensive is not in their best interest, especially if they experience some of these severe injuries, deaths, associated with using the equipment. So I think they need to look at safety features. I know that sometimes people think programs or that the lifts can be expensive, but I think if they would look in terms of what is workers' comp costing you, what are any of these medical malpractice injury suits costing you?
Right. I think that in our experience, though, in our lawsuits, if the administrator is only looking at cost, I don't think that they're really worried about the workers' comp.
I think they should, both for their lifts, for their beds, for other equipment, look at what are we trying to accomplish, what's the risk by going with something that meets the intent. It's a lift, it's a sling, but it really is not safe, nor has it been, nor is the safety testing really adequate. But I think that it would be good for administrators to consider all of those viewpoints and not just say, we only have X number of dollars, so we're going to go with the least expensive piece. And again, it may be adequate, but it may not be really safe.
And how, so we just talked about how and why administrators should pick, different equipment. But as far as determining what residents actually need a lift, is it just any, is the intent to replace any physical lifting at all? How do you know who needs a lift?
So you should have a good evaluation, and there are different ways to evaluate the residents. Need to consider what level of assistance is required. This can remain stable. Some residents are going to need the same level of assistance or no assistance for an extended period of time. Others, you may see fluctuations in the level of assistance needed throughout the day. They may need more assistance in the morning, less in the afternoon. During the night, if you just need to do a quick toilet break, they may need some assistance there. You also have to look at the resident's ability and willingness to understand and cooperate. as well as any medical conditions that may influence the choice of the lift and sling. And so I think having a good evaluation assessment screening to really help determine, okay, right now, given how the resident is able to participate or not, which piece of equipment, which lift should we use? And so, for instance, at some nursing home, long-term care, they have ceiling lifts, and they use them, again, depending on the level of assistance needed. They may have ceiling lifts and some floor-based lifts, depending on if I'm trying to move the resident out of a chair in the common area and back to bed, a sit-to-stand lift may be appropriate. So having some type of quick evaluation, and then I think also screening the residents, and there are a number of quick screening tools to see, are they becoming more debilitated? Are they less able to participate? Do they need a greater level of assistance? So they may do well on, for instance, the timed up and go test at the beginning of the month, and then you see that their time is becoming less. And not that you need to do that type of test on a real regular basis, but on some kind of a frequent basis that you can determine is the resident needing greater assistance because they are becoming weaker, they're becoming more debilitated.
And are you seeing an increase in the use of lifts?
I would say that overall, yes, there are some nursing home, long-term care facilities that are, for instance, part of their standard build is they put in ceiling lifts in each resident's room, and it tracks not only over the bed and the main living area, but it tracks into the bathroom to allow for toileting and to allow for shower. I do see floor-based lifts at some facilities being used more. Again, I think some facilities have embraced this much more than others. But yes, also based on, unfortunately, the number of incidents that are being reported to the FDA medical report, device reports, it would appear that there's more lifts out there because there are, I'm seeing more incidents in this database.
You know, I will say this, and I don't know what your experience is with this. I saw a lot of resistance on part of the staff to use lifts simply because I think they're safer and they're easier on those of us that end up having to do the lifting, but they do take longer because you've got to put the sling underneath somebody. And it may be only a couple of minutes, and it may be just a perception issue, but when you're already short-staffed, it can be frustrating.
Well, and I absolutely agree. So if you are going to implement lifts and slings, again, you need to have adequate numbers of the lifts, adequate numbers of the slings. Staff that become proficient at using the lifts will tell you it absolutely makes them more efficient, and they know they're safer. And then, frankly, having to overcome that resistance against using them. Sometimes I always want to look at why is staff resistant. Well, if they have a lift that's 20 years old and it's very difficult to operate and very heavy to move, I would be resistant also. So really looking at why is staff resistant. Are they resistant because they really don't feel like they have had adequate training? Or again, they have to go way down into the basement, onto the get the elevator, bring it up, bring the lift up. It's like that obviously is going to take too long. At facilities that have adequate types, adequate numbers of both lifts and slings, and staff have been well trained, you will find staff that say, I absolutely would not move this dependent resident who requires assistance without a lift. I'm much more efficient. I can get it done. And then the other thing I hear from staff is, and I go home and my back doesn't hurt. So it's a win for me. In some situations, I think administrators have to pay attention to why staff is resistant, but then they also might have to say, listen, you have to do this because it is safer for you. We need you here taking care of our residents. We can't have you out with an injury, and it's also safer for our residents. We cannot be dragging residents, dropping residents. So this is how we operate. These are our standards, our processes and procedures, and we'll support you in making sure you are able to do the right thing every time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Teresa. And kind of along those lines, are there any just basic tips that you would give to a family member of a loved one who's a resident in a nursing home that needs a lift? Like, are there things that you would advise, hey, watch out for this, or, you know, make sure that this gets done, or something along those lines that would protect the safety of that resident?
I would want to choose a facility that had lifts and had a good program in place. And I know sometimes that is hard to find, but I'm thinking about my own mother when I was at, she was in assisted living and was able to talk to the administrator and say, you know, I really don't want, and my mom at the time, 5'4", weighed 114 pounds, but I don't want to see your staff struggling by putting a gait belt around my mom and pretty much dragging her. It's mm-hmm. like, you need to use this lift with her. They had a lift. It wasn't the best. But then the discussion I had was, you know, there are lifts out there that are much smaller frames, much easier to maneuver. It's much easier to apply the slings. It really would be good if you would look at some of those lifts. And that is how I would prefer that my mother and the rest of your residents be handled, with greater dignity, and again, not pulling and pushing on them, and not obviously causing your staff such significant discomfort. And it was just such a difficult thing to watch these two young, healthy, athletic CNAs try to move my 114 pound mother with a gait belt. So I think having that discussion, and I know it's a difficult time when you're transitioning a loved one into long-term care, into a nursing home, but I think really looking at the fact that there are nursing homes out there that have installed ceiling lifts, that have adequate numbers of floor-based lifts, and they're providing safe, dignified care for their residents. So having that discussion, I'm hopeful that administrators would be receptive to that and might say, okay, let's see how we can bring in more lifts and bring in the right types of lifts and slings.
Well, that's very insightful, very helpful. And Teresa, thank you so much. I think we've covered most of the bases with slings and lifts in nursing homes. And again, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us and with our audience.
And being a trooper, despite the technical difficulties, too, yeah. We appreciate that.
No problem. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Teresa.
Yeah. Teresa is great. This is, like we said, this is the second time on. She's fantastic. Very knowledgeable.
Well, she's not just knowledgeable, but you can also tell that she's a presenter. Because she's engaging, she's informative, she does a lot of presentations, she knows what she's talking about, she's got a lot of credibility. So I always appreciate when somebody is not just extremely smart, but also and knowledgeable about a subject, but also knows how to communicate that subject matter, which she does.
Exactly. Well, the only thing left to say is for everybody out there, thank a veteran. Because as we all know, as this goes to air, it'll be November 12th, and that is Veterans Day. And as we remarked, I think a few weeks ago, the correct way to write out Veterans Day is veterans, plural, not mm-hmm. with an apostrophe. It's not possessive, mm-hmm. which I thought was an interesting fact that I learned as I was researching Veterans Day. So thank a veteran out there, everybody. If you would like to continue enjoying episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, they come out every Monday, and you can consume them in one of two ways. You can either watch the episode on our YouTube channel or at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And if you do, like and subscribe, or you can listen wherever you get your podcast from, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes. And you can also like and not subscribe. Well, I guess you can subscribe to those as well, but also leave a review if you're so inclined. But we appreciate you out there listening. We appreciate Teresa. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.